8 o'clock, Jim and Cake today. The Jim Davis Show on the Team Sports Network, 101.1 FM, 1340 AM in the Valley, 102.1 for Highway 50, online all the time. You can also get our mobile app at theteam1340.com, Apple App Store, Google Play, and get it there. So, you had the clip of Eli Manning and the golf trip where he said he gave Peyton the atomic wedgie.
Yep. And it was a recent trip, too. It was like from within like the last 5 years.
And I mentioned a couple of things with my brothers.
Brother.
What's the worst thing your brother has done to you or you have done to your brother?
That you're willing to admit.
My one brother, I sprayed him down with shaving cream while he was sitting on the toilet getting ready to go on a date. The other thing was an accident. It really wasn't. You know,
no, it wasn't intentional.
It was not intentional. When my motorcycle hit my brother's dirt bike and he sat down on the cylinder of the bike and fried his buns.
Got a little cooked, did he?
Oh, yes, he did. So, do you have a brotherly encounter where maybe you did something terrible to your brother or your brother or did something terrible to you? Got spots in the Avalanche losing last night. Wasn't pretty, losing 4-1. The St. Louis Blues. You've got Rory McIlroy in the lead of the PGA Championship. And we talked about it with Ty from GJ Golf. I want to thank Ty once again for doing our GJ Golf PGA Championship contest to win that wedge. And we talked about Rory, and he's like, you know, Rory might be able to build off what he did at the Masters that final Sunday. So,
might be.
So Rory right now with the he's 5-under right now as the lead at the PGA Championship in Oklahoma. So Justin Thomas is now at 5-under. So Justin Thomas
With the lead.
Tied for the lead. Tom Hogue, Will Zalatoris, both at 4-under right now at the PGA Championship. So, got some thoughts on that. Tiger Woods was 4-over yesterday.
Hey.
Yikes. Not good. So,
Who was only 1-over yesterday, and I'm going to bring him up again for 4-down territory. One Mr. John Daly.
Santa Claus had the lead early yesterday. Did you see the beard that...
He is sporting a fantastic beard.
I say Santa Claus. He's a golf Santa Claus.
Yeah, we'll talk about him coming up for me at least in 4-down territory. But man, oh man!
I'm like, what? It's kind of like we see David Letterman with a beard for the first time,
right?
It's just shocking.
Thick, gray, long, ZZ Top esque looking beard,
and two guys that never sported a beard look.
No.
During like the height of their celebrity,
and now it's
always clean shaven.
And now it's, you know what? If it would work on anybody, maybe it's John Daly.
Sure. Why not? All right. So you can text or call us 970-242-1340. Chris Hanks will join us at 9 o'clock, by the way. So we'll talk to the skipper of the Mavericks after the win over West Texas A&M last night. And also Casey Underwood, the coach of Snead State, Alabama. They're coming to the Junior College World Series for the first time. All right. 804. Love to hear from you today. I've got something on your mind. Worst thing you've ever done to your brother or your brother's done to you. And a lot of the Manning boys. I would have liked to have seen Eli giving Peyton the atomic wedgie. I don't know if that's physically possible.
Because, again, he's 6'6".
Yeah, it's not like he's like our guy JJ, our sales guy.
Oh,
he's like 5'2", and way to go, JJ. Go to the game last night, and they lose.
I was about to say
he is not allowed to attend any more Avalanche games.
He was... Oh, I was mad. I was so mad. Obviously, because they lost, but number two...
Oh, by the way, I saw JJ's dad, Biff, last night. Apparently, you're his hero.
I'm his hero?
You're Biff's hero, JJ's dad, because I'm sitting there with Ray, and Biff pokes his head in the window.
Okay.
Well, hi, Biff. How are you? And he's like, oh, I thought Tyler would be up here because he's my hero. And I go...
He did not say that.
Yes, he did. And I go, okay, what
have I done? Like, I mean, don't get me wrong. I'm also flattered.
I'm feeling a little bit jealous here. It's like, wait a minute, Biff. thought we were buddies here.
Thought we were tight.
Apparently not. What's
the deal?
Apparently, you and him are very tight, according to Biff.
I mean, I have interviewed him a couple times for our public access
apparently
show.
He feels a connection with you.
Okay. Well,
that he apparently doesn't feel with me. So that's okay.
But see,
it's all right.
Well, see, now and I feel bad for him because clearly he didn't get to go to the Avalanche game, unlike his son.
Biff should have gone. Though it was nice to have him at the Mesa baseball game. Yeah, his kid who had to take his. I asked him, are you going to take your little beer league trophy over there that you got from your beer league? Hey, buddy, you going to take that? Going to show that to Joe Sakic and say, look what I've won. Look what I won. Maybe you should give me a tryout. Maybe you should go to the Eagles, get a tryout.
Nope.
No.
He was so like, oh, I'm in row 17, and it's going to be so cool. I'm going to leave at 3. I'm like, you suck.
Yeah, I was.
And you know what?
I was like, okay, really, rub salt in our wound. Thank you very much. Though I thoroughly enjoyed being there last night calling the Mesa game. Great game. Great crowd. Enjoyed working with Ray. That's the first game that I've called with Ray McLennan since JUCO like 20 years ago.
Really?
It's the last time Ray was on the radio doing a game. I mean, he's been on our show many, many times.
Right.
Coaching at Fruita. But yeah, it's been about 20-some years.
And he's a Mesa product, too.
Played first base for the Mavs back in the 80s. For Byron Weehee, for the Chief. And didn't get a chance to talk to the Chief last night. He was roaming around at the field there. But yeah, Ray played for him back in the 80s. And we both were matriculating at then Mesa, and then not long after that, Mesa State College, back in the mid to late 80s. All right, so enjoyed that last night working with Ray. We'll have the game today with the Mavericks and St. Edwards at 3 o'clock. All right, we're all over the place. Let me grab the wheel. No, I'm as guilty as this as you are. So let's talk a little NFL. Russell Wilson has a chance to do something that, well, Peyton Manning has done it. I think Brady has done it.
Drew Brees.
Getting a win against every team in the league.
Brett Favre.
Piece of garbage, what, Brett Favre.
Yeah, what a.
I'm sorry. Just what I've lost any little respect I had for Brett Favre, which dropped dramatically after the picture of himself that he sent to Jim Sturger back in the day. And then now the bilking of money for the poor in Mississippi. But anyway, Favre's one of those guys that's got to win against everybody in the league. Russell Wilson could be that guy too, could join that group. But he could also become the youngest quarterback to ever do it, though.
Love that.
That John Breach of CBS Sports noted the Seahawks and Chargers are the only teams that Wilson has not beat in his career. Guess who Russell Wilson gets to face? Game one, regular season.
That would be the Seattle Seahawks.
And then he'll get two cracks at the Chargers in division.
And I feel like we could win both of those games, to be honest with you.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't mind getting both against the Chargers. Getting one. Yeah, I think that's doable. Love to think that they could get both, but probably one. But, obviously he spent the first 10 years of his career in Seattle. So the Chargers, the Seahawks faced them twice with Wilson as the starter. Seahawks lost 2014, 30-21, then lost 2018, 25-17. So he's had two losses in his only chance to play against the Chargers. Well, now he's going to get that opportunity for the next couple of seasons and hopefully longer now that he's quarterbacking in Denver. So kind of an interesting little note that he could become the youngest guy to do that. Also, Pro Football Focus, they have a list of the most underrated players. And for the Broncos, they think it's Justin Simmons.
Underrated. You know, I can see that because he didn't get to the Pro Bowl this year. Not that that's really all that important because he made All-Pro.
Rather be All-Pro than Pro Bowl.
You know, he didn't get the Walter Payton Man of the Year award, but he was the nominee for the second year in a row, so that's not nothing.
Yeah, Pro Football Focus they list him as the team's most underrated player heading into the season. Here's the reasons why. Number one, they think he's one of the best safeties in football. Posted a career-best 90.7 PFF grade in 2019 that kind of establishes how good he really can be.
Right.
And, you know, has maybe not played quite to that level since then. He's been pretty consistent for the most part. That is excellent in coverage, does impact the run game. He's averaging more than 25 defensive stops across the past three seasons, which is more than what your typical safety usually does in the impact he has on a game.
Right.
So they have him. And you just think, right, you don't think Justin Simmons would be the most underrated player on the Broncos.
I mean, if you ask me who I think the most underrated player would be, I'll give you a name, and maybe it's a cliche at this point, but it's Tim Patrick for me.
I kind of think Tim Patrick fits that mold, yeah. Yeah, I think Tim Patrick, to me, I view him as more underrated than I do Justin Simmons. I mean, Justin Simmons is getting paid, you know, top safety money in this league now.
Right. Which he's earned.
Oh, no doubt about it. I just don't view him as underrated. And sometimes has not lived up to some of the expectations either. At times. He's kind of a slow starter. When it comes to, if you look at his career, it seems like he gets off to slow starts, finishes strong, but certainly I think he's one of the more athletic safeties in the league. He's one of the better safeties in the league.
It's like a diesel engine, right? It takes a little while for it to kind of warm up, but then once it gets going, it's going to stay that way consistently for quite a long time. It's also, I think, worth mentioning that, you know, sure, the defense for the last 5 years has been better in pretty much every statistical category than the offensive side of the football. But the offense plays a role in that because they couldn't stay on the field for very long and because they didn't really score enough points to get themselves in a position where they could rely on their defense to win games for them, that probably doesn't help Simmons or the rest of the defense at all in that case, because now you're talking about a defense that rather than playing to win games is playing to either not lose or is so gassed from having to go, oh, here we go, another fourth down, three and out, another punt, another turnover, another interception, another fumble. You know, just being on the field more probably is going to hurt your numbers. And I think with this team, the way that it's set up now, the ideal scenario is you either have more points on the board than your opponent for more than just, you know, once in a flash in the pan, or you have sustained long or longer drives where your defense is not on the field as often.
8:13, Jim along with Cake today from the Bozarth Miller Chevrolet Buick Studios, the most trusted name in automobiles. Jackson Wilson, River City Sportplex, set to join us in studio in a little bit. We'll get his thoughts about the Avs' loss last night, and also his Riverhawks team took them over to Salt Lake here recently to play in a tournament. So we'll hear from him coming up a little bit. Some more NFL talk. The Athletic, they put out an article about NFL win total, over under picks, and the best bets for all 32 teams. Now they're using their numbers from BetMGM. So if you're wondering where some of these are coming from.
Viva Las Vegas.
That's right. So they have the five best bets on this.
And just remember 1-800-522-4700.
Yeah, if you have an issue, if you're just an absolute degenerate gambler.
Or if you're me and you just suck at gambling.
Yeah, I don't do it enough to be great at it or anything, so I can't say. I've won a few, I've lost a few.
I was gonna say
when I do. So put it that way.
My $5 Nikola Jokic for 2022 NBA MVP paid off, and that's about it for the last few months.
So you're not looking at this article, right?
I am not at the moment.
So they've got the five best bets to perform over what the over under is.
Okay.
Give me two Two of the five that they have on here.
Two of the five for the, and this is for the Broncos, right?
This is just NFL.
Just
this
NFL?
Is NFL. Two of the five.
Two of the five that
they think will outperform what the bet MGM win total is.
Oh boy. I'm going to say are the Broncos one of them?
No.
Okay. Well, there went that.
These are your best bets.
Best bets.
Yeah. Most likely to perform their, you know, outperform the over under.
To outperform the over under, I got nothing.
Or to hit the over under.
Or to hit the over under. I'm so.
You just want me to give them to you?
Yeah, yes, please. I'm. This coffee is not working this morning. It is.
They have the Chiefs under 10.5.
Under 10.5.
To perform the over under. They think the Chiefs will. You know, the feeling is here that they're not going to win the division. And this
really?
Is this is from Vic Tafur from The Athletic. He thinks that the Chiefs will actually perform under their 10.5 here. So I'll provide some clarification here.
Okay.
Your coffee, my tea, neither one's working great today. we need to fire them. They have the worst pass rushers in a really tough division. Some regression with Tyreek Hill gone. And doesn't think they'll win the division this season. Division's going to be too tough. So he thinks they're going to finish on 10.5 or under 10.5 wins. I'm not buying that. I just think they're going to find a way to get to that number, if not maybe win 11 games this season.
Well, and think about this, too. The Chiefs are your, what, 5 or 6 time reigning AFC West champion. So you're talking about that's the standard that every other AFC West team is going to fight for. And so that right there puts the Chiefs sort of at this sort of default setting of that's the team we're aiming for. That's the team that we're gunning for.
I mean, make some valid points in terms of a lack of pass rush. I mean, they got Frank Clark, but they don't have a great pass rush. How much there seems to be a lot of feeling about how much Hill's departure to Miami is going to impact their offense.
Right.
But we've seen the numbers when Hill's been out. Patrick Mahomes still wins football games, and the performance really doesn't drop off at all.
Some may argue it's better.
And are they going to miss Tyrann Mathieu in that secondary? I think they probably will. But I just can't buy them being under 10.5. Love it, but love to see it happen. Not buying it. Bills, over 11.5. I could see it. I could see the Bills winning 12, 13 games this year.
I think 13 is probably the number for them.
Seahawks over 5.5. Can they win 6, 7 games?
No. No, they cannot.
I don't know. I don't feel like they can.
Well, because so first of all, it's gonna depend entirely on the quarterback. And
do they go out and get Mayfield? Doesn't seem like they're that interested in getting him.
You know, and we've talked a lot on this program at various points about different teams in different sports, quote unquote, tanking. I'm not going to outright say the Seahawks are tanking because I don't think they're full-blown tanking. What they're doing is this is the stopgap year between we've traded away Russell Wilson, we're going to have probably a really bad season this year, we're going to get a high draft pick, we've got other draft picks that we used in the Denver trade, and we're going to start a rebuild next year. Because I'm looking at this schedule. So I think, I mean, right, so you got the Broncos and Seahawks. I think the Broncos will beat them.
It should, yeah.
49ers, Seahawks in San Francisco. I think San Fran will easily beat Seattle. So they start 0-2. They'll probably get a win, and it'll be kind of a fluke win over the Falcons. probably get a win over the Detroit Lions because I don't think Detroit's going to be very good this year.
Yeah.
But I'm still looking forward to Hard Knocks.
I don't have a real good gauge on the Lions because at times they played very competitive last year, even with Jared Goff at quarterback.
Right.
At times they played better than what their record was. And at times they had some games where they looked like the Detroit Lions and got stomped. So, yeah, I don't, you know, Seattle over 5.5. And this article he references that he had talked to somebody, former NFL player, that Drew Lock is better than Mayfield and Jimmy G because he knows he sucks and won't make as many stupid decisions. Okay, we've seen this show in Denver. If that's the case, then he would have dramatically cut down on the mistakes that he made, which he didn't, which was part of the reason why he's now playing in Seattle.
And I've got I was reading somewhere the other day that said early indicators point to Geno Smith having a slight edge.
Yeah,
but whatever I was reading also was quick to point out that the edge comes from the fact that he's been in the system,
and he started games last year when Danger Russ was out, so he got some snaps and some experience. Saints under 8.5. I can see that. I'm not sold on Jameis Winston. I like to think that Jameis Winston, this was going to be the right situation with Sean Payton there. And then Winston gets hurt. Sean Payton's now gone. Dennis Allen, one-time Raider coach, one-time Broncos defensive coordinator.
Right.
I tend to think that the Saints are probably a 6-win football team. They have the Colts over 9.5. I'm buying that.
I do too.
Really good offensive line. Matt Ryan doesn't have to be great. Jonathan Taylor, that running game, they've got a really good defense with Leonard and those guys. I could see the Colts winning over 9.5 games.
And it's kind of been for the Colts a plug and play at quarterback because they had Phillip Rivers, they had Jacoby Brissett.
And Carson Wentz for one year.
Carson Wentz. And look, one win over the Jacksonville Jaguars, the worst team in the NFL, would have gotten them into the playoffs. And the fact that it was in Jacksonville probably doomed them from the start because they haven't won in Jacksonville in however, like 4 or 5 games, however long it's been. So that's not all on Carson Wentz, but also I think there was something that came out yesterday about how Jim Irsay was pretty much ready to move on from Wentz pretty fast. And that the fact that he got Matt Ryan to come to Indy, I think for Matt Ryan, that's going to be, if not the complete rejuvenation of a career, at least he can maybe have a little bit of dignity as his career comes to an end in the next year or two.
Right. Irsay, to give it some point of reference here, made a comment that moving forward with a mistake was the worst thing a team could do. And it was very obvious the team needed to move on this offseason from Wentz. And Wentz felt like those comments were
directed at him.
Obviously. Where he says, I mean, it is what it is, you know. Everyone's entitled to their own opinion. I thought last year was a really fun year. I thought we did some incredible things, came up short at the end. Yeah, you lost to Jacksonville, which it wasn't all on Carson Wentz. That was a team effort right there by the boys in Indianapolis. But
not getting your run game established hurt.
Yeah. So I just, you know, if you're the Colts, I do think that the Carson Wentz was not as bad as a lot of people like to make him out to be. But I'll take Matt Ryan over Carson Wentz at this stage of his career.
At this point, yeah.
At this juncture, yeah. I would take Matt Ryan and not think twice about it. All right, 8:25, we're going to talk with Jackson Wilson, River City Sportplex, coming up in a moment. He'll tell us what the hell went wrong last night for the Avalanche against St. Louis. But it's time to play Where in the World is Tyler Franzen?
Where in the world is
Carmen Sandiego?
Where the hell is he?
Well, I can't find him.
You cannot hide forever.
I will find you.
All right, your chance to win a case of brewski. Some fat tire today.
All right, excellent.
From High Country Beverage. For Where in the World is Tyler Franzen? Today, we go to the links And I'd like to present to you now the Google reviews of the so-called number one public course in the U.S. Eric, a local, writes, great service at the driving range, pro shop, and at the restaurant. Kaylee writes, we enjoyed the atmosphere and great people watching too. And finally, Benjamin writes of this West Coast course, great place with lots of room and small greens. Where in the world is Tyler Franzen?
All right, so looking for a golf course today.
Yes.
All right, very good. PGA Championship, by the way, going on right now. Give you a quick update on it. My computer will cooperate here. Justin Thomas, 4 under. So it looks like he's fallen back a little bit. Will Zalatoris, because he was at 5 under, I believe, just a moment ago. Will Zalatoris at 4 under. Tom Hoge at 4 under as well. McIlroy tees off later today. All right, 8:26. We will take a break and we'll come back. Get your answer in for Where in the World is Tyler Franzen and win a case of Fat Tire from New Belgium Brewery and High Country Beverage. Send it on the Chick-fil-A Breakfast Team phone line, 970-242-1340.
Craptastic.
That's just crap.
The team presents The Jim Davis Show on Colorado's sports leader, The Team.
Welcome back, 8:30. Jim along with Cake today from the Bozarth Miller Chevrolet Buick Studios. The most trusted name in automobiles, Chris Hanks. Maverick Skipper will join us top of next hour. Also, Casey Underwood, the coach at Snead State, Alabama. They have qualified for the Junior College World Series. All right, time to talk a little hockey. We have Jackson Wilson, River City Sportplex. And Jackson, what the heck went wrong for the Avalanche last night?
Oh, man. They just got themselves into a little bit of trouble. Couldn't execute. Then things start going downhill. St. Louis builds up some momentum, scores that big first goal. And, you know, I thought the Kemperer stood tall that whole first period, but they just didn't have it. They, you know, St. Louis came out with a jump that the Avs didn't have at the start of the game, and they just kept that momentum through it.
I think in the case of Craig Berube, the coach of St. Louis, I think that the thing was, look, we've got to slow this game down. We got to take away their speed as much as possible. And that seemed like that's what St. Louis tried to do last night was try to just turn it into a very physical, grinded-out kind of game, which, you know, like the Avs can play physical hockey when they need to, but, boy, if you find a way to negate their speed,
right,
that's a killer.
Yeah, I completely agree. And Craig Berube, as you mentioned, the Blues coach, he's a smart guy. I mean, he was the interim coach when they won the Cup a few seasons ago, and the Blues still have a lot of pedigree of these guys who went through the whole playoff push and found success, and, you know, and they're looking for it again. And he went ahead and separated their top line of O'Reilly, Perron, and there's a winger with some European name I can't remember off the top of my head right now. And he separated those guys up, and they were able to all find success on each of their new lines. And, you know, that's what you got to do against the Avalanche. The Avs are just so good that you got to kind of think outside the box, be able to move pieces around, and then also be able to try and play a disciplined game like the Blues did, where they just lay the body, hit, get pucks deep, go ahead and try and get possession, and then shut down that speed of the Colorado Avalanche.
We're talking with Jackson Wilson, River City Sportplex, of course, right there off the Riverside Parkway. And, you know, a 4-1 loss last night. Avs did get the power play goal with Landeskog, but it just felt like that, you know, the comment was this, Nathan McKinnon, we're just bad. We're just really bad tonight. And you're going to have those games, right? And I think Jared Bednar made a really good comment. He's like, look, it's a 1-1 series. It's still a long series. They're a good team. We respect them. We didn't expect to come in here and I'm kind of reading in between the lines a little bit. We didn't expect to do to the Blues what we did to the Nashville Predators. And this is, I thought it was going to be a 5-game series anyway. So that's kind of where we are. The Blues match up well with the Avalanche.
I agree. And it's, you know, coming off that game with the series with the Predators, coming into the series with the Blues, they had a great game one, and then the Blues kind of bounced back. They got their legs under them for this game too. It's absolutely tough, and Bednar's right. Like, it'd be nice to win 16 straight games and hoist the Stanley Cup, but unfortunately that's not how it works all the time, and you know, they'll drop some games, and hopefully they learn from it. And, you know, now they have to go in and steal one, not if two games in St. Louis to be able to definitely get a good grip on the series. So it'll be very interesting to see what happens in St. Louis. I know that place is going to be rocking. Those Midwest fans are nuts. So, you know, I think the Avs are going to go in, feel some energy, and hopefully, you know, come out with their speed and find ways to gain speed through the defensive and neutral zone and then go ahead and get on their attack like they normally do.
What's the message from Coach Wilson if you're in that locker room? if you're in that dressing room, what do you tell them?
Oh, just try to open up the ice a little bit more, right? So try to be able to swing a little bit more, which basically means that, you know, instead of building speed just north and south, vertical up the ice, you need to try and build some speed a little east and west. And then as you get those passes moving up, you're able to kind of move that puck back across the middle, right? And so if you're able to spread out the Blues, go from wide to the middle, back wide, get the puck deep behind Bennington and go attack, right, and not turn it over once you get that puck, like, you're going to find a lot of success, right? And then obviously just get pucks on net. Super simple, right? Shorzy says it all the pucks. Pucks on net. Let's get, you know what I mean? Like, so if you have guys like Nathan McKinnon, Cale Makar, Landeskog, like we've been saying all year, like, they will score goals. You just have to be able to get them into space with some time, and they're going to bury pucks.
Of course, in game one, they had the five posts. In a game that really shouldn't have gone to overtime in game one, Makar with a rare misstep, he turns it over, O'Reilly scores, and then they had the bad line change that led to the goal that got it tied, but the Avalanche win it thanks to Josh Manson in overtime. But yeah, last night's one, you just got to wash it away and regroup for tomorrow in St. Louis. We'll have it here on the team pregame at 5:30 faceoff right around 6 o'clock. Tampa Bay beating Florida 2-1. Lightning, yeah. This is their time of the year, right?
Unbelievable.
They have a 2-0 series lead.
I cannot believe that this is their, you know, they've been in playoffs all the past 4 or 5 years or whatever. They've played 105 games or so the past two seasons, and then they're still looking as fresh as they do.
Yeah.
This season, it's unbelievable. I mean, especially against a high caliber team like Florida, which in my Stanley Cup playoff bracket prediction, I had the Panthers facing the Avs in the Cup final. And, you know, now I'm starting to sit there watching this game. I'm like, oh my goodness, like, the Lightning are legit. And then it helps when you have a 6'7" goaltender and Andrei Vasilevsky back there who just looks like a mountain in front of a small pond. And
it makes Darcy Kuemper look like a little kid.
Yeah, absolutely. So it's, you know, Tampa looks really good, and they have the depth still. And, you know, and John Cooper, their coach, is an unbelievable hockey coach. He's won at every level. So that series has been fun, the Battle of Florida, and Tampa's really getting a hold on Florida now.
Yeah, Calgary and Edmonton.
That game was wild.
9-6.
Oh my gosh.
The Flames lead that series 1-0. So the pride of Canada right there. The Flames and the Oilers trying to find a way to get one.
Blood.
Yeah.
If you watch hockey for fighting and blood, watch the Battle of Alberta between the Oilers and Flames. And that was a crazy game in itself. Flames went up 3-0. Oilers pull the 40-year-old Mike Smith. See you later. Flames go up 5-1. Then the Oilers climb all the way back, I think, to make it maybe 6-6 or so. And then Calgary scored the final three goals. And Matthew Tkachuk nets his hat trick. His dad, Keith Tkachuk, former 15-20-year pro, refused to throw his hat out there for the hat trick. I don't know why. And then the cool part was to Matthew Tkachuk's brother, Brady Tkachuk, who plays for the Ottawa Senators, was in attendance, right, sitting in the crowd with the fans, and then they catch him walking up the stairs. He's got a beer in his hand and two in his back pockets, and that's what I call supporting a brother right there.
You're kidding. That's right.
Yeah, I love it. So that's, you know, that's good stuff there from, and I know a lot of people maybe hate the Tkachuks just because of, you know, hockey stuff, but, you know, I'm just such a hockey guy that I just sometimes, you know.
Appreciate the hockey family, right?
I do. I appreciate some of the on-ice antics. I'm just like, oh, that's pretty cringeworthy. But, you know, when you see that, you know, that sort of stuff, you know, and, you know, he's not just sitting there telling the media he's drinking kale smoothies. And,
exactly.
You know, I'm only eating tofu and whey or whatever. You know, he's in the crowd hammering some
cracking
beer,
a little bats from Olsen, yeah. and enjoying watching his brother play. And then you got Carolina and the Rangers. Carolina leads that series 1-0 after the 2-1 win. We kind of expect Carolina to be in that Eastern Conference final, don't we?
I agree. Yeah, they're so good. I mean, they're a great team. Freddie Anderson, they pulled out of Toronto after all those first-round exits. He's been playing, or he's actually hurt right now. So Ranta's been playing well. Antti Ranta, former Coyote they got. So, I mean, the goaltending's there for Carolina. They have great young defensemen. The Colorado homegrown Jacob Slavin up there playing for him really well. And then, you know, they have great forwards and Sebastian Aho, Tara Vinen, Andrei Svechnikov and all these guys that can put the puck in the net. So, I mean, I really think it's kind of starting to look like a Carolina-Tampa, you know, Eastern Conference Finals. But, you know, there's still a lot of time. I think Florida has a chance if they can find their wheels. And, I don't know, the Rangers just don't really seem like they're in that boat of elite teams that are left. They just don't really seem like they have that, you know, that kind of pedigree or that, you know, hockey skill and sense to be able to push onward.
Jackson Wilson, River City Sportplex with us. You took the Riverhawks over to Salt Lake City last weekend, and give us a report. How'd the kids do over there?
Yeah, I mean, it was good. So we went and played in the Utah Mountain Cup, which is a pretty big tournament. I think they had about maybe 10 to 12 divisions and probably close to about 120 teams or 130 teams overall. And, you know, since we're still a new club, we played in one of the lower divisions with our 10 U's and 12 U's, so 10 and under and 12 and under. And we had a lot of new players. So a lot of these kids that went through our Riverhawks learned to play. We call it the Lil Hawks. A lot of Lil Hawks kind of left the nest and
became bigger Hawks.
Became bigger Riverhawks. So I was super proud of them. They did well. The scores didn't necessarily reflect on how much they learned and the effort that they were putting in and everything like that. And again, we're a brand new club. So, you know, we're playing organizations that have played together all season that are going into play. And then also when you get into spring and summer hockey, you find a lot of, you know, private coaches. And like, so for example, there's a team in Salt Lake where they have kids from three different organizations they're pulling to be able to come play for this one spring team. And so, you know, they kind of get their choice to pick and choose. And, you know, the cool thing about what we're building here in Grand Junction is that we're big enough and we're going to get to that point where we can do that, but just from our own pool. And we're going to be able to have very successful spring teams, winter teams, everything like that, without having that luxury of being in a bigger metropolitan area and pulling from other organizations and stuff like that. So I'm super excited. The kids I'm super proud of, right? We got some stud little goalies in there who took a bunch of shots, and we got a bunch of new kids who were able to play full ice 5-on-5 hockey for the first time.
Awesome. So anything you want to know about skating, the hockey programs, you name it, rivercitysportplex.com. Check it out today.
Yeah.
And get on the ice. All right, 8:41 and time for Four Down Territory.
We're into Four Down Territory on the Jim Davis Show on the team.
All right, first down, we've talked a lot about Nick Saban taking shots at Jimbo Fisher, taking shots at Deion Sanders. Now, Saban is saying that he should not have singled out any schools by name and apologized for that. He reiterated his remarks were motivated by concern for college football and what the current rules will lead to. Okay, Nick, I agree with that part of it. But why didn't you just say that to begin with? Why are you calling out Jimbo Fisher? Why are you calling out Deion Sanders? Just say, got my concerns. Here are my concerns about it in general.
And people,
that's not what he did, though.
Well, and people will listen to you because you're Nick Saban.
Nick Saban.
Your words matter, Nick. Don't go starting feuds and beefs that you can't end.
Just come on, Nick. He was enjoying taking a shot at Jimbo. He was enjoying that.
Oh, yeah.
All right, second down. Occasionally, you might hear Jim Nance calling a golf tournament. You know, PGA Championship on Sunday, he'll have that opportunity. Nance revealed that sometimes when he's quiet, there's silence in a key moment. It's not necessarily because he's always letting the, you know, hearing the crowd and all that. It's because he himself gets very emotional, and he's afraid he's going to lose it, like start crying or something on the air when an emotional moment happens. So he gets choked up, and he has to just calm down for a moment, regroup, and then start describing again.
That, you know what? That's kind of cool.
That's great that he admits to that.
I like that.
Yeah.
I love it. But, you know, it's he's into it. He loves it. He's got great perspective, and that's why he calls it well.
Absolutely. Well, he's one of the best in the business. All right, third,
hello,
fourth
friends.
Down. Hello, friends.
All right, speaking of golf, athletes have their regimen, right? The TB12 method or, you know, whatever the athlete regimen is. This was John Daly's we'll call it regimen, but I use that term loosely. For his first round of the PGA Championship, his regimen included 21 cigarettes.
Of course.
12 Diet Cokes, 6 packs of peanut M&Ms, and not 1 ounce of water to be found.
Look, nicotine, caffeine, chocolate, it's on the training table of champions. Like John Belushi back in the day on SNL with little chocolate donuts. They're always on his training table. Those are always on the training table of John Daly. Of Santa Claus, golf Santa Claus now.
The year's 2022, and I'm pretty sure John Daly was leading this tournament at one point yesterday.
He was.
So.
He was early on, yes.
God, I love golf. I love it so much.
All right,
fourth down. Boston Red Sox second baseman Trevor Story. 4-for-4 last night, 3 home runs. This is the second career 3 home run game. The last time he did it, it was in a Rockies uniform, first of all. It was in 2018.
There was sadness.
And it was at Coors Field against the San Francisco Giants. I miss you, Trevor Story.
I miss you, Trev.
Jeff Passan says that with his 3 homer performance last night, Trevor Story bumped his OPS up 107 points.
Yeah, he's got off to a rough start. I still miss Nolan more than I miss Trevor Story, though.
I miss them both.
Miss them both. I get to pick one. I'm missing Nolan more. Yeah. All right, it's 4 down territory. Jackson, always appreciate it, man. Thanks for coming in.
Yeah, absolutely. Good time.
Good times. All right, Nate Porter, Palisade baseball coach, joins us next on the Jim Davis Show.
We're going to be here a while. Would you like to talk?
Talk to me!
The Jim Davis Show on Colorado's sports leader, The Team. Talking Palisade Bulldog sports on The Jim Davis Show.
Palisade Bulldogs baseball team opens up the 4A postseason tomorrow. They are the overall number one seed in the 4A state baseball tournament. Bulldogs coach Nate Porter joins us right now. Good morning, Nate. How are you?
Good morning, Jim. How are you doing?
Doing well. So did you enjoy your time in the mountains on Thursday?
Yeah. Well, it was work-related, but it's always fun to go up there and I lose cell service, so it's one of my favorite trips.
So, incommunicado, cannot talk to anybody, radio silence, up there, what, checking out a job site, I would imagine?
Yeah, we're finishing up a job up past Colburn, and so I just went up to make sure things are wrapping up like they're supposed to.
Well, I know for your ball club, no big surprise when the bracket came out, number one team, number one seed in the 4A state baseball tournament, hosting your region this weekend out at your ballpark, and one of the most remarkable seasons Palisade baseball's maybe ever had. The year you've had 21-2 record, 12-0 record in the Western Slope League, and just a great way to head into the postseason, playing some really, really good baseball.
Yeah, we've had a good year, I'd say so far, because we're like every other team that gets into the postseason. We don't want it to end. You always want to win your last game, but we've been real thrilled with the kids. Work ethic and their buy-in and their character development, and just even their athletic development has been pretty fun to watch. And these kids have what it takes. It's really between the ears is what's going to be the make or break for us.
Yeah, you finished the year with an 8-game winning streak, and that was the 12-game winning streak before the loss to Fruita. So your kids just quickly dust themselves off and head into the postseason on that 8-game winning streak. So it's Aurora Central to open things up in the region tournament, an Aurora Central team that, you look at some of the numbers for them in terms of their top players from a batting average standpoint, that they're hitting .390 right now, so they come in swinging it pretty well. And they have one player in particular that has had a sensational season. That's Edgar Torres, the junior. .514 batting average. He's knocked in 31. They've also had a good season as well, Nate, from Luis Gardenia. He's their RBI leader with 36. It's a pretty potent offensive lineup that Aurora Central has.
Yeah, you look at their RPI ranking before the CHASA playoff schedule came out, and I think they were 51 or something, or 48. And it's really hard to tell with RPI. I think RPI is a little bit of a misnomer sometimes. They won their league. In fact, everybody in our regional won their league. Falcon and Windsor both won their league, but Aurora won their league, the Colorado 7, they call it, or the Colorado 4A, 3A. And they've got some good, they've got some really good players, it seems like. But until you get on the diamond with them, you really don't know. I mean, we've played a lot of the top 15 teams in the state right now, and there's some that are ranked higher than the ones that are lower, and gosh, I'd play the lower ones before I play the higher ones. So it's kind of the RPI is kind of a weird deal. They, with the scheduling, and and whether you're playing 2A and 3A teams or you're playing 4A, 5A. So we just, you know, I listened to Wareham's interview with you yesterday, and you know, I kind of shadow what he's saying is, you know, once you get into playoffs, things just, you know, it's who's hot, who's playing well. You just got to get in a fight because that's what it's going to be like. Everybody's playing with the highest level of intensity that they know.
Nate Porter, coach of the Palisade Bulldogs baseball team, the number one seed in the 4A state baseball tournament, joining us today on the Team Sports Network. They've got some decent arms as far as guys they've been rolling out. Ermon Villalobos, 2.56 ERA. He's got 5 wins. He's their win leader this season. So what else have you been able to learn about their pitching staff, Nate?
You know, we have a few kids that played against, I think, the guy that I would expect to see. You just never know what a team's going to do. But we kind of expect to see, if you look at Gardea, which is he's got the most innings pitched, and he's 4-1 with an ERA. But, and then Villalobos is another kid, obviously, you just mentioned, who's 5-0 with a good ERA as well. But those two guys, they've got the most innings pitched. But Gardea, I believe, is the kid that some of our players played against. But, you know, that was 6 years ago. And so how a kid develops, and, you know, we looked at their schedule and we haven't played any teams that they've played, and so we really don't know much about them. I had a coach from the Eastern Slope that I stay in contact with, and he gave me a little bit of a intel on them, but, you know, not a ton. Just he thinks we're gonna do just fine. But, again, you got to play against the ball, Jim. It doesn't matter who you're playing. You got to play against the ball. If a guy's throwing 87 miles an hour or 77, you still got to play against the ball.
Nate Porter, Palisade Bulldogs baseball coach with us. Other side of that bracket, team, one of these two teams you'll face, get past Aurora Central first in the championship game. You could face Windsor or Falcon. You mentioned those are teams that have come in winning league championships.
Yeah. It baffles me. We're hosting a regional. We have 4 league champions in our region, and Rifle's hosting a regional, and they don't have any league champions in there. So I kind of was thinking, man, we should have lost a couple games and got down to the number 2 spot in RPI, and maybe we'd have. But, you know, I talked to Paul Kane the other day, and his basketball coach years ago said, you know, at some point you got to beat the best to be the best. And so we're happy with who we're playing. We're gonna just give it our all. We're gonna play hard, and quite frankly, we've got a good team. And Falcons got a little lefty freshman that shoves, throws strikes. Windsor's got 2 guys that throw, you know, between 82 and 85 miles an hour, pretty consistent, throwing strikes. They've got a potent offense if you look at it. So they're going to be a good team. And, you know, you kind of look at stats and you just never know who they're playing against. But, you know, we look at our stats and our stats are good. And we've got kids that play hard and they want to win. So I'm excited about this week, and I know the boys are. It's been a grind for us because we've really pushed them really hard this year. This is the hardest I've ever pushed a high school team that I've coached and been a part of, and I believe it's paid off. So we're pretty excited about getting past Aurora, and that's the most important thing. You can't ever look past, but we're planning on the best outcome for both games.
12:30 tomorrow for Aurora Central, then the championship game at 3 o'clock. We hope to have coverage of as much as possible around our Mesa coverage tomorrow on the team. Hey, Nate, I appreciate it. Good luck tomorrow.
Thanks, Jim. Have a good day.